Hello and welcome to another episode of the Troll Patrol Podcast, aka AY and Dust Show. I'm the AY.
I'm Justin, aka Dust.
In this episode, we're actually going to discuss a recent event that we attended called the Southern Ontario Open.
And I guess for those who don't know, the Southern Ontario Open was a qualifier for War Machine Weekend. And it is, from what I've heard, the first event of its kind in Southern Ontario. And
yep, definitely the largest ever in Southern Ontario, and it was a War Machine Weekend qualifier event, yeah. The Masters event, we should say.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yep, and so a few of us did go, and Dust and I both played in the Masters.
Yep.
Alan and Brandon played in the Youngbloods, but they're not here to talk about their experience. But one notable thing is Alan won Best Painted.
Yep.
For his minions.
His Pharaoh, no less.
Yep. His Pharaoh, no less. And people were talking about it the next day.
Yep.
Because Pharaoh are apparently that rare.
Yep, because nobody plays pigs. Because they're not a real faction.
Exactly. So, actually, a local and new friend of mine, or not that new, but whatever, we'll just say new friend of mine. So, my new friend Herb told me that I apparently talk too much about Signar Dust.
And Gun Mages.
And Gun Mages, yes. And
Trenchers.
Trenchers, that's right. So, in an effort to, you know, maybe mitigate that, today I'm going to talk about all of my battle reports with my Signar armies in the Southern Ontario Open. Don't worry, Herb. I promise you, next episode I'll try to talk about other factions, but in this faction, sorry, all of those people who are apparently tired about me talking about nothing but Signar, but this is going to be a Signar cast.
Well, no, it's not going to be a Signar cast, because it's also going to have my battle reports, right? So,
that's true.
His complaints was really about you just talk about just about Signar.
Oh, I see. Well, don't worry. I'll talk about all the other factions that I played against.
That, I don't know if that really counts.
Oh, well.
No, does not count.
I guess let's get on with it.
Okay, yep.
Get ready, guys. This is going to be our most boring episode ever. Battle reports. So, Dust, what were your three lists?
My three list was Butcher 3, Vlad 2, and Irisk 1.
I see. So your lists were just casters.
Yep, just casters. No. It was Butcher 3 with double units of Black Dragons, Great Lord Tyrians, with Widowmakers and a bunch of support like Madeline Corbeau, Ogwen Bokur, Kael Baelock, Saxon Auric, even Reinhold was in there. I guess typically I would run it with Alexia 1, but for some reason, playing in a tournament of that scale and being on Death Clock, which is something I'm not used to, I thought that Alexia 1 would tie myself out. So I just decided to drop her out and put in Grey Lords and Reinhold instead. And funny enough, they actually did work out for me.
Oh, good. Good.
And I guess with my Vlad 2, it was with Kaizi Assassins, Black Dragons, Devastator, War Dog, double units of Eliminators, Widowmakers. Those were probably the key pieces. I'm probably missing something else. And on top of that, my Irisk was, I guess, really traditional infantry spam with Kaizi Assassins, Black Dragons, the whole Winter Guard
Death Star,
and Widowmakers, Ian Holt for the Menoth and Krix matchup. And it was using Beasto 9.
Mm, very nice.
My round one. Round one was Destruction, from what I recall. And my first round one was... My round one was against Chatty, who played Circle. And he used Chromac as his caster. And I guess before the list, the match even started, I already saw Chromac as part of the choices. And from there, I guess usually people would avoid dropping Butcher 3. But I thought... dropping Butcher 3 was, it may not be the most optimal choice, but I think it was still, I guess, a fair battle. And because I guess people are really more afraid of Bestial, and Bestial is 12 inches, correct?
14.
How's it 14?
His control area is 7.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Okay, anyways. I just thought that, you know, it didn't really matter about Bestial because I could basically just go for just regular buying attacks. I could still pop my feet. And
I think it's pronounced Bestial.
Bestial?
I think so.
Best for Bestial?
Yeah.
I thought it was Beast.
No, because it's not spelled Beast.
Oh.
It's spelled Bestial.
Well, now I sound really silly.
That's okay. Don't worry. It's 12 inches, Bestial. Don't worry.
Okay, eventually I'll get these rules right. But anyways, we started playing, and I guess the match was underway, and he had, I guess, Chromac with probably was a usual loadout. It's like three beasts or something like that, and druids. I don't know if that was a typical loadout for Chromac. And I believe I went first, and I moved up my guys, and then he moved up my guys and saw that I had Widowmakers, and he first went after them with his shrimp, and he took out a few of my Widowmakers, and it was then it was back to my turn, and then that was when Killbox started to put it in effect, and I guess I moved up all my my double units of Black Dragon, and then I moved up my Spriggan to Till the Zone, and like I said, that was when I realized that there was like just so much infantry in front of me that I couldn't really move Butcher in, up to avoid Killbox. So then I'm like, oh no, don't worry, I'll be able to fix this. So I'm like, okay, I'll activate Butcher and I'll have him run, and I ran him up like I ran him up forward, but it was like. So far forward, it was up to the side, and that's when my opponent said, "Oh, you're in Killbox," and I'm like, "Wow!"
You can measure Killbox during its activation.
And
right?
The saddest part is that I was constantly measuring Killbox, but only from my edge of the table to the front. Right? Yeah. I wasn't measuring from the sides. Right? So, yeah. Also, on top of that, I think it was also I knew Killbox existed, but I forgot the concept of Killbox. It's kill box, as in a whole box, not kill, you know...
Table edges.
Table edges. Oh. So I kill boxed myself and got 2 points, and then it was his turn, and then there was only, like, I guess, two Black Dragons and a Spriggan contesting the zone. So he just basically just teleported his beast up to the Spriggan and scrapped it and then killed the two Iron Fangs that were towing the zone, and then he ran up Cro-Mac to dominate the zone.
And destroy the objective.
Destroy the
objective. For the full 3 points.
Yep, for 3 points. And then that game, that was that. He got 3 points. And then we counted the armory scores. He got like probably like maybe 5 points. Because I think he killed Eris and half of my Widowmakers and 5 control points. And he's like, oh, okay, let's see how much you get. Okay, so 0 control points for me and 0 army points. And he's like, yeah, good game, buddy. And then I'm like...
If he killed your Spriggan, actually, he would have gotten
at least 10. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, I think he got at least 10. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's like, good game. And I'm like, was it really? Like, I mean, like, it was, I guess it was well played, if that was what he meant, but I guess there was...
Well reacted to.
Yes. And for a game to actually go on, I think it has to go on, like, past turn 2.
Oh, I see.
My opinion, anyways. I guess, and from then on, the whole match was over in 10 minutes, and I guess I was just sitting there, wishing I played some more War Machine.
Oh, sorry. My lists. So first, I was using my Haley list that I have used for pretty much the last year, and it's Haley 2 with Thorn and Squire. Then the units are Boom Howlers, Nis, Arcane Tempest Gun Mages, Alexia and the Risen. I normally have Ion and Holt, but I subbed them out to make a pure War Machine skew, and I put in Eris, a Stormsmith Stormcaller to replace them.
Okay.
Then I have Junior, Anastasia Debray, Gorman DeWolf, and then Rupert, Piper of Ord. Then I have my Kane 2 list, which is Kane 2, Rowdy, Squire, Pressgangers, Rangers, Steelheads, Forge Guard, Gun Mages, Junior, Eris 2, Victor Pendrake, Taryn de la Rovizi, and Reinhold. And then the piece de resistance. So traditionally in my two list formats, my main weakness is trolls and scorn, like when there's like, you know, several beasts,
yep.
Because I have no way to deal with it. So I thought, you know what? I could make a Crixie Striker 3 list. And it went through like about 3 iterations because I only got to play Striker basically 4 times previous to this event. So the final iteration that I brought with me to the event was Striker 3 with a Lancer and Silas, Pressgangers, followed by Rangers, followed by Steelheads, followed by Forge Guard with Murdoch, followed by Arcane Tempest Gun Mages, followed by Black 13th, then with Junior and Runewood following up the rear.
And Ragman.
Is that, like, point for point your list?
Yeah.
Well, I should... Yeah, I wish I could memorize my list, but I'm probably missing a lot of from my list that I've mentioned.
Okay. Yeah, I you know why? Well, with my Haley and Kane, like I spent basically this whole last year like tweaking,
right?
So you just kind of remember those things,
and then you could play those lists and remember those lists like the back of your hand.
Yeah, basically, all the striker list. We'll get to that.
Okay.
So in my first round, so I think I've said on this podcast a few times that I really dislike Protectorate and playing against Protectorate because they're pretty much what I consider my nightmare matchup. And I have actually never beat Fiora 2 Judicator because my lists that I generally take against it.
No exaggeration?
Yep, I've literally never beat it.
Okay.
And so, first round, I get a protected player, and I was like, oh my goodness, am I really going to get knocked out in round one? Because I face against protectorate.
Right.
So I was very afraid. So I pretty much figured the person was going to drop Fiora to Adjudicator, because he probably sees, oh, all three of us are infantry spam, fine. But apparently, some friends of mine have told me in the past, don't worry, Alan, like, your Haley list, even though, you know, it's kind of rough, you should be able to handle Fiora 2 Adjudicator. I'm like, you know what? I haven't tried it yet. And considering I've literally lost every other time I played it, or played, you know, against Fiora 2, I may as well try. So I picked Haley 2. I got to go first. So I'm like, sweet. So my entire army unpacks and basically runs up the board and, you know, gets positioned with, like, my toughness and, you know, Boomhauer staying 4+. And, you know, people kind of weaving through to get ready for the next turn. His turn, because he sees that my guys are pretty much like halfway up the table, he's like, oh man. So this was the fun part for me. He decides to call battle with his choir and then walk up with the Adjudicator and start laying in AoEs. So yeah, you know, like maybe like a few models, like maybe two or three models got lit on fire or whatever. It's not a big deal. So then it's, and he runs up with his Zealots and pops mini feet. So, you know, trying to like keep them alive, I guess, and kind of mucking up the area in the front
zone,
line, around the zone. Because okay. I don't think he can quite reach the zone. All
right.
So this is important to note that the side of the table he chose, there was a wall there, but it's tall enough so it actually blocks line of sight. So it's basically an obstruction. So okay. His Fiora 2 was hiding behind an obstruction the entire game. And it was out of the kill box zone. So, okay. Whatevs. So, my opponent's name is, he was a French person named Guillaume. I might be mispronouncing it.
I think you're mispronouncing it.
That's how I think it is.
Oh, man. We're just offending. We're just losing all of our French listeners right now.
Sorry
there.
If I mispronounce it.
Okay.
But, yeah, so anyway, so a part of me kind of smiled because he cast battle. All right. So that was his big mistake. So basically, I, you know, moved Thorn up a bit. I dominate his Reckoner. He had two Reckoners, by the way, in this list as well. I dominate one of his Reckoners. I decided to hit a non-camping Fiora with it. I got the hit, and I did 9 damage to her right off the bat.
Oh, wow.
So it kind of makes him worried. And then I jam the rest of his stuff. I run my Nis Hunters to engage his Invincible Zealots and just kind of, like, take over the zone. And, you know, I can't destroy the objective yet, so I just have to, like, prepare to do it. I pop V2. It's his round. He dirtles around because he can't do much because he's blocked out of the zone anyway, and he's got to forfeit stuff and, you know, all that good stuff. So he just tries to fire off some Adjudicator shots and calls battle again. So I'm like, okay, right? So that happened. So when it's my turn, I go and try to dominate the Reckoner again, and I go attempt to hit Fiora, but I missed this time. What was important is I just got to move that Reckoner kind of out of the way, basically. And then I basically got to get Anastasia in there, get everything to basically activate twice, you know, get Gorman in there to both Black Oil the Adjudicator and Fiora too,
right,
by going around. And, you know, I hit with a Eris Disruptor Bolt. So Fiora is like really like, oh man, she's struggling. And I managed to walk two Nis in there. But silly me, they're out of command range of Sylena, so they don't get to make attacks. So the game would go on another turn. But by then it was kind of academic because I was able to kill the objective. I already scored 2 points for doing so because I controlled the zone and also, you know, destroyed the objective. And his Fiora is sitting with, like, no ability to get focus and, you know, black oiled and engaged and all that good stuff. He would basically get 5 focus or whatever from using his stupid feet.
Right.
But he can't do anything much with it because Alexia was within 9 inches and he had no ability to kill her because stuff is black oiled and moved out of the way behind that wall that, blocks line of sight.
That helped him at first.
Yeah, that helped him at first, basically. So by then, at the end of his turn, I scored another point. And then when it was my turn again, I scored 1 point. And then when it's my turn, I just ran up to dominate the zone. So in the end, I won 5 control points to none. And I had a total of 6 army kill points. So yep, that was my round one. So I can now say I beat Fiora 2 Adjudicator.
Congrats.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, so yes, my round two was against a guy named David, and the scenario was Balance of Power. He also played Circle.
I'm glad you actually wrote up the scenarios, because I don't really remember what scenarios
there were. Well, that's what you have me here for,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. That is why I have you.
Okay, but yes, he played Circle, and he had Mostar, and his other list was also Kruger 1 and Kruger 2. And I guess from there, looking at his list, I just sort of did a little bit quick thinking, because I actually faced against Brandon before, and he played Kruger, and knowing the power of Kruger 1, I believe, mm-hmm. he had Chain Lightnings, which basically go around like Iron Flesh, so I knew definitely that Irisk 1 was sort of out with his infantry spam. And from there on, so I just decided to drop Butcher again, because I thought that with double units of Black Dragons, Pal 10 Lightning, Chain Lightnings didn't really do much. So and I guess he sort of knew that I would probably be going for Butcher, and he dropped Mostar instead. And from then on, I guess we played it out, and I guess the key pieces were, in my list, were Grey Lords, who basically made the Pillars a non-issue, because it was basically magical sprays against ARM 18. So I guess on average rolls, I would be able to take them down, and I was able to take them down. I was lucky enough to take them down, so they basically were non-issue, and and also on top of that, Spriggan's grenades actually became useful, because they were blast damage, and blast damage...
Oh.
Yeah.
Pretty tech.
So basically, every single turn, he would be running up his stuff, and he would be, I guess he would just take a few shots with his, I believe it was his druids. Yes, it was his druids. So he'd be taking a few shots, and then he'd be popping a few clouds to hide, and then he'd have the pillars as reinforcements. And then, I guess as my first activations, typically during the turn, I would activate Spriggan to blow up the pillars, and then I'll have the Grey Lords to clear it up. And then I would have my Iron Fangs advance. And it was... I guess it was a game that went back and forth with a lot of attrition, and in the end, there was a key turn where he, I believe he ran up his...
It's a satyr?
Okay, so yeah, he ran up, and I believe it was either to go for the assassination or to scrap Spriggan, one of those, but I believe he managed to either flub his, his charge or managed to be short. Sorry if I wasn't... I wasn't able to remember, but it was one of those. Basically, he sort of fed me his beast, I believe, and then from then on, I killed his beast, and then the rest of my infantry sort of managed to attrition out the rest of his pieces, and from there on, we were basically just cramming things into that small box every single turn, and in the end, he basically managed to drop down to literally three warrior models and his caster, and I guess I decided to just go for the assassination, and there was nothing clogging up my way, and then I went to time.
You all know!
Yeah. And it was kind of funny, because it was during a game where Brandon, the circle caster that I managed to get all the circle experience with, he finished his journeyman game and walked over, and he just kind of looked at the board and just thought it was academic and just walked away. And then after that, I went to check up on him, because he started his round, and he's like, he's like, oh, so how'd it go? You won, right? And I'm like, no, I lost. And he just started, like, he just was a little bit outraged. He's like, you know what? I'm going to throw something at you. It's like, you could have just walked in and appending doom and everything. You just did all this stuff because Mostar was just right there. And I'm like, yeah, but I went to time. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah, going to time. If you don't have time to do all your awesome kills.
Yeah. So. I guess it was kind of...
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was really telling, because the thing is, I think I was just doing my turn, and then I just kind of looked over the clock. I'm like, there's something wrong here, because he has 40 minutes left, and I literally have 15. Mm. So I'm like, is that the time? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay.
Ooh, well, yeah. You know what? I had a similar experience in my rounds two.
Okay.
Okay, so in rounds two, I faced off against a Legion player named Mathieu. Another French person. And so, like I said, he had Legion, but I pretty much knew he's going to be Veil 2 drop. That's what he's going to do. Because let's just face it, Veil 2 is like the best. So, Theme Force, of course. This one was a version that had two Ravagors and two Angels. So, I just did my usual Legion / Circle / Most Hordes drop with King 2. So, I went first. Again, I flood the board, flood the zone with... my press gangers and all my stuff, you know, waves of infantry, just kind of like after each other. He goes and he's like, oh man, those press gangers are awfully far up. So, you know, he tries to get some like hex hunters. I put blur on them, you know. So he brings up his hex hunters, try to like clear some out and, you know, does some shenanigans to try to get some corpses for his pod and, you know, basically sets up his stuff, but he didn't really want to commit yet because like, he doesn't really want to go too far in, right? So he decides to go kill a few press gangers or try to, but you know, I make about the average number of tough checks. So then it's my turn. Press gangers, they just, there's like two can charge random hex hunters, so they do, and the rest just run, some engage his pot even, and then others like just kind of engage some of his beasts and whatever, just really get in there. And then my steelheads, they just run really far up to even be past the zone, and my forge guard just try to get up there. And one thing of note is in this scenario, I actually now got a little obstruction pillar on my side of the table. So Kane was basically hiding there pretty much all game, just poking out, you know, taking a few pot shots, but he would like
teleport back.
Yeah, gate crash back. But Kane mainly stayed a non-factor in the game, but since he was in a position that like things could happen if he tried to commit to the zone, he was always worried then basically because it's like, oh, if I put like, you know, some beasts in the zone, Kane can come out and kill them all, you know, especially with like Victor's boosts.
Right.
Right. So then it's his turn and he's like really in the tank now. And he's like, oh man, what am I going to do about all these like press gangers and like, you know, random things. And he goes and, you know, makes some decisions. He decides to pop his beat and, you know, to take Arcane Shield off my Forge Guard so he can try to like, you know, get rid of them because he knows that they will be a problem eventually. And he goes and kills a few things here and there. And the thing is, because I have like, you know, 40 plus infantry, it still looks like I have quite a bit, even though I killed quite a lot in the speed turn. Right. But, you know, that's it. He's still camping, though, because he knows that Vale can just randomly die, right? Really, when you think about it, Vale can die to like a random press ganger charge. So he decided to play it safe. And, you know, stupid angels, of course, overtake, refuge back. So whatever, that's just how that turn played out. Then it's my turn again, just like, you know, shove more stuff up his beast and stuff like that. I even actually have some gun mages push his stuff out of the zone, and eventually I actually end up getting one or two control points basically throughout the course of the game, you know, just flooding the zone, and I actually do threaten his beast and stuff like that. He then goes again, it's like, oh man, so he goes and kills even more stuff and puts two angels and like a Ravagor at the edge of the zone. So I'm like, oh, I gotta do something about this, right? But luckily I was still contesting, but I'm like, that's okay. He knew that he had to force me to stop getting points. And you know what? I guess this was as good a time as any to blow feet. So, you know, Reinhold does his thing and say, hey, Kane, have an extra shot. And Victor is like, hey, Kane, let me tell you a story about beasts. And Kane's like, all right, we're going to do this. Pops feet, go bang, 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 right? Like, I'm like shooting into his angel and stuff like that. And, you know, throughout like the 10 shots or whatever I have, you know, three of them miss, you know, needing like anything but triple ones. And, yeah.
Okay.
Miss three shots. And get some poor damage rolls. And basically on the very last king shot, the thing is, I was down to three focus, I was like, oh man, am I really going to commit to this? But I thought that, you know what, I could keep Kane safe. So I'm like, all right, I think I can keep him safe. So I just blew the rest of the three focus, and only on the last focus did I actually kill one angel. When usually, like if you math it out, Kane can easily kill two angels on his feet. Because, you know, I had a ranger and everything like that. So, you know, things happen. Then, like, you know, my Forge Guard come in, they are able to, like, tie up like, you know, one of the Ravagors, and like I got like steel heads and like Forge Guard lined up in such a way that if his angel does try to kill Kane, they're gonna get free struck and the angel will probably die to a bunch of Forge Guard free strikes.
Right.
So, and you know, Victor is also kind of in the zone. So now it's his turn. He's like, he sees that, yeah, it's kind of stupid to kill Kane or to try to like charge for Kane. So he actually does a good job of clearing a bunch of stuff out and like overtaking like the stuff that was gonna free strike him anyway. And now, like, you know, he knows, oh, Kane's not going to contest scenario. So he decides he's going to go for scenario. So he goes and tries to kill, like, two solos or whatever. But one of them ends up, probably a press ganger. It's like something tough's in the zone, you know, when that happens. It's just like, okay, I guess I don't get a point, but at least I can test, right? That's what he thinks. So then it's my turn again. I'm like, oh, he really does have me on the ropes. Now, like, he is going to be able to remove whatever's, like, there. So I'm like, okay, well, Kane, run away now. That's the rest of the game that he's planning on doing. And I put Victor up in the zone and all this stuff. So it's his turn again. The game has been dragging on for quite a bit now,
right,
as you can tell. And he goes and tries to kill Victor Pendrake. He kills other things, but Victor Pendrake is now the last thing in the zone. Kills it. Tough. Like, sweet. Goes for another shot or whatever. Like, you know, things are just attacking him. Tough. Tough, tough, tough. Five tough checks in a row. Tough. Is it okay for the game?
Yes, yes, that's your catchphrase now. That's your catchphrase now, apparently, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know what? Victor makes his five tough checks in a row, contests the zone still. He doesn't get any points. And then eventually...
Was he the only one contesting the zone?
Yeah.
Wow.
By the end of it, he was the only one contesting that zone. So, you know, so it's my turn. I'm like, ooh, it's gross. You know, so I just run more stuff into the zone. And, you know, he does end up, when it's his turn again, he does end up killing Victor and stuff. But then he runs out of time.
So what was those points standing at the zone?
He ended up getting some points, I think. Like, at some point in time, I might have missed, I missed a turn. I definitely missed a turn where he, like, did clear the zone.
Right.
Before I put Victor Pendrick in there.
Okay.
So he got, like, 1 or 2 points. Right. Okay. But the thing is, then after when I contested with, like, you know, Victor and stuff like that, it's kind of like, well, I took away his ability to win by scenario. And this is Death Clock. So what ends up happening was he clocked himself out because he had to chew through all my stuff,
right,
basically. And, you know, always be wary of Kane. And in the end, I had about, like, 35 minutes left on my clock before he clocked himself out. So, you know, unfortunate for him, but that brought me win number two.
So even if Victor Pendrick died and did,
he would have got a point then,
but still wouldn't have.
But still, it wouldn't have been to win though.
Okay.
Yeah, because I would have just brought him up to like 3 points basically. So, and Vale wanted nothing to do with the middle of the zone, because
even after you pop feet.
Yeah, because Kane can actually realistically kill Vale without feet.
Oh right, you just buy a.
Yeah, because she's like just like a 15-15 or something like that. So Kane almost trivially hits her, almost, with the
sixes.
With a ranger.
Okay, so on fours.
On fours to hit, and it's dice minus three
right.
for damage. And she, so, you know, a few spikes here and there.
Yeah.
She's like, ooh, right? And by then I had killed like two beasts, I think. Although he still had two fully healthy beasts. So, yeah.
Okay, my round three was against Chris, who played Retribution, and the scenario was Incursion, so it was the three flags. I guess I probably did a really bad job of remembering his list, but in the end, he chose Assyria as his drop, and I chose Vlad 2, because, I don't know, I guess at that point, I just felt like playing Vlad 2, and I also kind of thought that, you know, since it's not a Hordes matchup, I could potentially go for the assassination with any of my pieces, especially my Kaizia Eliminators. So I thought Vlad 2 was a pretty safe drop. And on top of that, I guess at that point in time, I was pretty pleased that he didn't have the pick an army with the with House Guard Riflemen. Except that didn't really matter because of Sirius Feet, which I would soon learn has True Sight. And on top of that, yeah.
So you're learning a lot.
Yeah, so I deploy my stuff, and I see that he has. I guess it was a very peculiar list because it had Ilara, which had the Hyperion on it, which was a lot of points to bank on her. And Assyria had an Arc Node, but I guess I would soon learn that he had a plan for all of this stuff. So I saw his Mage Hunter Strike Force, and is it Mage Hunter Strike Force? Yeah, it's Mage Hunter Strike Force. And I guess in my head at the time, I'm like, oh, sweet. These things will probably take a few shots at Vlad and flub the assassination, because the thing is, as Vlad takes more damage, his defense goes up. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it's not straight. It's like slow plinking shots, right? So basically, he goes slowly up and up. So he basically moved up his stuff, and then he popped for feet, and he's like, okay, my stuff has True Sight. And I'm like, oh.
And let's not forget the choosing dice.
Yep, the choosing dice. So he had his Mage Hunter Strike Force go up and basically just wipe out my Kaizia Assassins. Everything but two Kaizia Assassins survived. And he also put like probably three shots in Vlad, giving him three blood tokens. And yeah, he just basically killed all my Kaizia Assassins on feet turn, and didn't really manage to get a critical on Hyperion, unfortunately, even with the ancillary attack. So from then on, the ball was passed back to me, and I was like thinking, okay, it's okay, because most importantly, so my Outriders were still in play, and I think he managed on his feet turn only managed to kill one Outrider, so there's still four Outriders. And also there, like practically a good bulk of my Black Dragon was still around. So basically I had the Black Dragon just run up, and then I had my my Devastator with a sail just charge up and just like basically just sit in that middle part where it was between the middle flag and the side flag. So it would basically halt the tramples on Hyperion. Mm. And then I just basically started clock the zone and just ran up Vlad to the other point. And then my over series of turns, my Outriders would just basically just go on the side and just sort of spray down any of his remainder infantry. He still had a good bulk of his strike force rest of the game. But I guess when they were engaged next to the Kayazi, like the remainder, the two Kayazi assassins, and also on top of that, the Black Dragon, they couldn't really effectively kill them because they were engaged. And then that's when I decided to feat with Vlad. And I guess typically I would go for the assassination, but I kind of realized that Assyria was and Elora, who was sitting next to her, was so far enough away that I wouldn't be able to get out of charge. So I'm like thinking, you know what? It would probably be good enough if I just ran them up. Just ran up to them so that they were engaged. So that's what I did. I just ran them up so they were engaged. And I think I managed to get some points. And then Hyperion was still blocked off by a few Black Dragon and the Devastator. And when it was his turn, basically he just had no way of handling the Kayazi Eliminators in front of them. yeah. So basically they were at defense 20 while they were engaged in melee, and that Assyria had no melee weapons to speak of. Yeah, she had no offensive spells. So it's basically up to Elora. Elora just ran up and walked up over and attacked, tried to boost her attacks, and she would need 14s, I believe.
Oh.
Yeah, 14s on boosted dice, and he didn't get it, unfortunately. And I guess I was just able to camp the whole zone. to go back. I also feeded on the remainder of the Kaizi Assassins, which basically charged up his Arc Node and scrapped it. Because earlier in the game, he blinded lighted my my Outriders. Hmm. And he's like, oh, no magic, no magic. And I'm like, oh. And then I was like,
see, you're learning a lot.
Yeah, then I became really scared. And I was like, is that an upkeep? And he's like, no. And I'm like, okay, I got this. So basically, yeah, that's when I decided to feed to basically run up those Eliminators to keep Elora busy, and just ran up those Kayazi to scrap that Arc Node. Then I guess basically the game was just a slow bleed. Vlad just managed to basically score points every single turn, and his stuff was just all distracted. There was that turn where I could have gone for the assassination on Assyria. But sadly enough, my Kazi Eliminators managed to miss their attack rolls on her. And that was another turn. It was pretty risky where Laura could just sort of kill them off with boosted attacks because they weren't feeded anymore. And I guess, to be honest, I should have gone for Laura because the Hyperion was linked up to her, and the Hyperion was kind of a big threat.
Yeah.
And but for some reason, the Eliminators managed to survive, and that's when I managed to basically cap for the rest of the points of Vlad and kill off Elora just for, I guess, the army points. And I managed to win the game on 5 control points.
Oh, good for you. Good for you, actually. Oh,
thanks.
You pulled it out. Like, at first, you were telling me this, I'm like, oh, man, it sounds bad.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, good for you.
Yeah.
All right. So my round 3, I see Crix.
My opponent's name is Kevin.
Like, and I had no idea who he's gonna drop. All I know is he ends up dropping Denny one, and for me, my auto Crix drop is back to Haley. I guess Kane can handle it too, but I'm like, Haley, I feel more reliable because the thing that always scares me about Crix, I guess, is they can randomly just win through, you know, a tricky assassination or something. So I'm like, you know what, Haley can also do that. So we both have to respect each other. I figured that's what the strategy was. And you know what? I figured I had a gun line and stuff like that. And from what I hear, when I hear conversations between people talk about Crix versus Signar, I'm like, everyone says Signar has an advantage. I'm like, oh, sweet. So I'm going to have an advantage in this match. Great. And you know what? The whole game, we're relatively even. So I guess we'll go over his Denny 1 list. Denny 1 had like 2 Arc Nodes. It had the Blood Witches with the Blood Hag. It had Banes with the UA. You know, War Witch Sirens. 2 Pistol Wraiths. And, you know, stuff. Nis Hunters. Right. Yeah. If I'm missing anything else, it's kind of irrelevant. It doesn't matter. I basically took my Gun Mages and Eris and, yeah, sniped at the Blood Hag early on. I actually sniped at one of the Pistol Wraiths. I'm sure Gorman was in that list somewhere. I killed Gorman. Like, you know, over the course of the game, I just sniped out his solos while being able to kill mine or protect mine because I have D cell, which is weird because the few games I have played against Kricks, I didn't need D cell, but against this one I did because it's like a Denny gun line.
Yep, yeah, it's Nissan Hunters.
Yep. So I but between D cell and stealth, he actually had no way to eliminate my solos. But gun mages, you know, my favorite unit, they're doing all the work there. But overall, the game remained relatively even until Denny's speed turn. Then, you know, half my army just evaporated. I'm like, oh, I thought I had an advantage. I thought that's what everyone told me. Apparently, I don't. So I'm like, well, that sucks. And I figured, oh, you know what? I got to go for a long odds assassination then. So basically, I had... he basically came up with Denny's, scored a point, I think. I forget what the scenario was.
It was a three flag, so it was incursion.
Oh, it was incursion?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. So Denny comes up to dominate the side flag to get 2 points. Like, oh, sucks. So I get Thorn to come in some janky angle, but he's camping like pretty much this whole game, which is a very smart thing to do.
Right.
But this is the turn where he decided to at least cast a crippling grasp somewhere. So he had a little less focus. So time bombed him, you know, also hit him with like a arcane bolt that did nothing. And I don't know. I got Anastasia to activate like the whole army again, basically to like, you know, get a few more like shots in there and stuff like that. But all in all, she was camping a little too much. And yeah, I was like, wow, can't do anything about it. And I looked over at our clocks and I only had about maybe 4 minutes left, 4 minutes and 30. No, that's not true. I had maybe 3 minutes left. And he had about like 10 minutes left or so.
Right.
So he goes on to his turn, you know, and he's like, all right, you know, wow, Thorn is kind of a big deal. So he actually comes up and he knows that I have set defense. So instead what he does is he decides that he's going to cast Parasite on Thorn and then walk up 5 beans to engage Thorn and like attack him.
Right.
I knew he would do this. So I actually cast Arcane Shield the turn before. So he goes in and the Bane Knights, 5 of them, it sounds very menacing, but you know what? At 7s to hit, some of them are going to miss.
Right.
And yeah, it ends up I got lucky and 3 out of the 5 missed instead of about 2 of the 5. And then since they were charges, you know, it's still, it ends up being a dice minus, what is his power? It's basically 13, right? So dice minus 5. So, you know, you do good damage. He did about average, like 5 each hit, but my Arcanode is still alive.
I see.
Yep, and then he's like, okay, that's it. Sitixis Raiders. And he had like 2 remaining Sitixis Raiders. They go and they try to attack Thorn, but like I don't think they even break through the armor. So it's like, okay, well, either way, he's like punch, and he's like, he sees I only have like 4 minutes left. So, and by then, he, I think, also used up like about 5 minutes of his turn. So now he's at the 4 minutes.
Right.
So we both have 4 minutes. I'm like, okay, I immediately, while it was his turn, I knew what I was going to do if Thorn stayed alive. And, yep, Storm was alive. So first things first, I take my last one from the Squire. I activate Gorman. I walk up. I throw a acid bomb at my Thorn, who now lost his movement.
Right.
For thanks to the Bane Thralls. So it's anything but to hit, even when engaged, pretty much.
Right.
I think pretty much. Either way, if it's not, it was something very easy. I hit, Paltols on everything. Every Bane Thrall dies except for one, who makes a tough roll, and the 2 Sitixis die. It's not that the engagement was important because he can still channel engage, but because he put them all in a tight circle, I had no line of sight to Denny. But throwing the acid bomb opens up line of sight.
Oh, okay.
Then Anastasia activates. She goes over and does espionage on Denny. Because again, he has like no ability to remove her.
Right.
There's no, you know, lack of stealth or lack of shooting that can see through stealth and stuff. So then Gorman activates again, walk over, throw a black oil at Denny.
Oh, right. Double Gorman turns.
Yep. So that's sweet. And even though I had that janky assassination turn the time before that failed, I had still done, like, let's just say 5 or 6 damage on her. So now, all of a sudden, here's Denny with, like, no focus. It's like, okay, well, Haley's going to time bomb her again, and the time bomb wipes her out. If the time bomb didn't wipe her out, I was still going to fire again with another arcane bolt would be completely boosted. And then I still had like 4 or 5 gun mages I could shoot into her.
No, oh, okay.
So it was gonna happen. And by the time my turn ended, I had by the time I assassinated her, I had like 34 seconds left.
How much is the power on time bomb?
14.
Everything within it takes 14?
No. Just Denny.
Oh, but a direct
yeah,
direct
Thorn
hit.
Was within 5 inches of Denny.
Oh, okay.
So it was gonna get her. So yeah, the biggest mistake we talked about it after, the biggest mistake he made was basically he saw that my clock was running low too, so he should have just run Denny away instead of keeping her to get more points. I understand his logic though. Why not get points, right?
Right.
Because then he might win. But the thing is, at the point where like he sees that I only have like 4 minutes left, I think if I were him, I would just run. But you know, he ended up. By then, I guess though, it was kind of too late because he had tried to commit to do some things. We were now very equal on time. We were already a little equal on time, but he was advantage, you know, with 10 minutes to four. But because he was trying to kill Thorn and roll all those attack rolls and stuff like that, it didn't work out. So either way, though, I squeaked out a win against anyone, and yeah, that was a rough match. It's like, oh, wasn't an easy tournament.
31 OP.
Yeah, to anyone, too good, too good.
Yeah, especially when she like, gives like -4 to stuff on feet turn.
I'm on the record. I think I said before, Denny's definitely top five, you know, for casters.
Well,
I definitely
top
believe that.
fifth in this case. Well, fifth caster out of the top five.
But you know what? I'm gonna switch to Crix eventually, and I think Denny one is the best Crix caster. But we'll see. We'll see. Okay. So you have a round four?
Yes.
Did you actually stay for the whole event?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good for you.
Because,
Don't didn't drop. That's good.
well, if I dropped, there would be literally nothing else to do.
Oh, really? They didn't have other. Oh, I guess because the first day, yeah, everyone's still playing their games, so
Yep,
there's no.
so why not? And yes, I guess it was well worth it because on round four, it is close quarters, which is basically the two circles, and you can dominate your own circle. Your own flag, sorry, and then the opponent on the opponent's flag is basically dominate and control for one and two. And my round four was against Justin, who plays Kador, who I basically played before, basically once or twice over at the Friendly Troll. And easily, he is a he's a great player. He's very I would say the most memorable thing about him. He's very gracious if anything that, and but very I guess. He's just a fun guy to play
Yeah,
against.
I know.
I would say, yeah, he's definitely like probably one of the top players when it comes to sportsmanship. So I was against him, and his lists were basically, I believe it was Vlad 3 and Alt Witch and Butcher 3.
You can tell we don't do many battle reports, but we don't know what our opponents are using. We
Yeah.
barely know our own scenarios and what we did.
Well, I
So.
think you did better because you had the experience of a battle report, because you actually go to the turn by turn basis. I just basically went, this stuff happened.
This stuff
It
happened.
may not be in like an order, but this stuff happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, I guess, and then he looked at my list, and at that point in time, it was basically the end of the tournament, and my record was a whopping 1-2, and his record was, I believe, it was a 2-1, so he was actually paired down, and I guess at that point, I was just wondering. I knew for a fact that. That dropping Vlad, not Vlad, Irisk 1 would probably be favorable because I think he implied that he wasn't going to play Butcher against me for some reason. So I guess I had to tip off on that. And then I guess, yeah, but at that point I didn't want to play like a heavy infantry spam list, even though I guess all my lists were basically sort of infantry spam. So he's just like, just play whatever you want, man. And I'm like, you know what, you're right. So I dropped Vlad 2 against his Vlad 3, which is actually a tier list with all the horses. I had Olans, max unit of Olans, Fenris, double Manowar, what do you call it, dragoons, and the horse carriage, and yeah, literally all the horses, and Drago, and on top of that, he also had no, Drago's his only jack, and I just basically ran my same Vlad 2 list with. So the match got underway, and he ran his horses up, and he put basically his outriders opposite to my outriders. So basically, he just ran his outriders on first turn, and I guess sprayed down my Widowmakers, leaving all but one alive, and then I guess managed to get most of my Kayazi assassins. And then for some reason he basically kept his Vlad back and his Fenris back, because I believe it's for the feat turn. Basically, he would have those pieces to run up and mess up everything. And then my Devastator ran up and got himself engaged to Drago and two Manowar Dragoons. And I guess for some reason they were just basically locked in that position most of the game. I think the Dracoon managed to basically get out, and I did free strike naturally. And Yeah, because Drago just didn't manage to punch through that much massive armor, even with the extra Hand of Fate. Well, not Hand of Fate, the Signs of Importance that was built onto him, because it was Vlad's affinity. And I guess from then on, I casted Hand of Fate on the Outriders and just kept that the entire game. And I just basically just ran up to Ulans and I just sprayed them down. And I guess naturally, it was beat the dice minus 7, which was really bad, because on average, yeah, I wouldn't do damage, but with Hand of Fate, I managed to get that extra die in, and there were some turns. Actually, there were a few like sprays that I managed to do 11 points of damage.
Wow.
So I guess Dice Man 7 on that one would be 4 points of damage, and I guess several sprays that I managed to take apart his Ulans. After that, I managed to take apart his...
Hand of Fate is just like Signs of Importance,
though, yeah, right? Yeah, Signs of Importance, just for that unit.
But you still roll high, though, and...
Yep.
I see.
And I managed to spray at my own Devastator, basically destroying his dragons, and even with the dismounts. And then, basically they're just running around and just spraying everything and just managed to dismantle his entire army, other than Fenris and Vlad and the gun carriage. And I guess my Vlad was attempting to dominate my own flag. But unfortunately, he managed to run up his gun carriage there, and Vlad was just facing off his gun carriage. And sadly enough, I don't think the gun carriage is an impressive piece, and it really shows off in this scenario, or at least in this situation, when basically it's like, okay, I'm gonna trample over your Vlad. I'm like, okay, go ahead. And he tramples over his my Vlad, and actually he misses him anything like that, because Vlad managed to take down some early damage, so he needs tens to hit. With a gun carriage trample, and there's no way of boosting that. So Vlad managed to survive a trample. Unfortunately, the gun carriage was still in the zone, and I think it managed to tank all my sprays. The game felt kind of locked in. I was actually kind of short on time. He has 14 minutes versus my 7 minutes. And then I guess at that point in time, I could have potentially gone for an assassination with the Outriders, maybe. But he was sitting on a lot of camp. But at that point in time, he decided to go for the assassination first, and he popped feet. And for some reason, I thought that I poorly judged that Vlad had a linear charge, except with sidestep, that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So basically, he charged in, and then he sort of smacked a few things, moved 2 inches, smacked a few things, moved 2 inches, and got to Vlad. And then from then on, I think he killed about 3 infantry models, so he was at...
3 blood tokens.
Yeah, 3 blood tokens. Yeah. Three strength. So, and then from then on, he just managed to kill Vlad. It was practically a really hard-fought game because I didn't give him any control points thanks to a Devastator. And, I managed to destroy his entire arm. Even though with, like, arm 19, which I thought would be very impressive and be practically, like, immune to sprays, Hand of Fate practically, like, sealed the deal. Transference... I love that spell.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really work well in a purification meta.
Oh, so my round 4, I'm facing off against Philippe, another French person. So he's playing mercenaries, and the only thing that I see when I look at this is Earthbreaker. I'm like, he's totally gonna drop Earthbreaker because I know what he's gonna do. He's gonna look at my list and he's gonna be like, you know what? I don't think he can really kill the Earthbreaker. And you know what? He's right. So. He drops Earthbreaker. I drop Haley again because I had a plan. Everyone has now heard that Earthbreaker can kill you from, you know, really far away if you're not careful and stuff like that. So I'm, like, deathly afraid. So, yeah, you know, Haley, as usual, I think he gets to go first this time. I forget who. It doesn't matter who goes first. Either way, one of us go first.
Okay.
And the thing to note in his Earthbreaker list, it's with Durgan, and... He has a bunch of pirates, like 2 units of Pressgangers and Sea Dogs. So they like the goal is, I guess, flood the board and have Earthbreaker eventually come up and, you know, do whatever the hell he wants. And that's pretty much what he did. So then all I can do is react. The good thing is my list is very effective at taking out lots of infantry, especially defense 13 armor 12 infantry. Doesn't matter how much top you have, I'm gonna chew through it with.
Well, like, what kind of infantry was he running?
I told you 2 units of Pressgangers and a unit of like Sea Dogs.
Oh, okay. And so it wasn't like dwarves or anything like that.
They're there and menacing. They're like on my side of the table, you know, but just keep chewing through them and making sure he doesn't get scenario. Like that's all I could do, right?
Right.
The main thing that he capitalized on the first round is he ran Eris behind a wall, which pretty much meant I couldn't kill her, but he ran a pirate just a little bit in front of her on the other side of the wall. So I basically time bombed the pirate to hit Aeris with blast damage and kill her right off the, bottom of round one.
I made a few errors in this game because, I was always worried about that the Earthbreaker just killing me. So I played very defensively. I basically first two rounds Gorman just put clouds in front of Haley, while she cast D-Cell, and my Aeris was trying to run up the flank to threaten his Durgan, but then she ends up getting engaged by press gangers, and the press gangers don't kill me, but I only remember to activate her once to attack those press gangers. Otherwise, for the rest of the game, I just kept forgetting to activate her. So it's like, oh, well, she's still there and threatening, I guess.
It's actually pretty hard for her to kill press gangers, I think. Actually, are they armor 12?
They're only over 12, but
Oh, okay, never
it's
mind.
her sad mat though. Like, and
Mat
if
six
they,
is decent.
yeah, but she, you know what? I couldn't hit that
Okay.
first. I hit neither of them that first activation, and yeah, I just ended up forgetting her for the rest of the game. But it's okay. She was still alive at the end. I
All
guess
right.
that's what matters, because as long as she's alive, Durgan must be afraid, right? So, eventually, though, in my round two, I wanted to pop feed and I forgot. So that's I was like, okay, Gorman's end up putting up another cloud again. And guys, Boomhowlers, you guys gotta get this job done. So they're like running and they flood into the Earthbreaker and random other pirates and stuff like that. And we're both destroying so much stuff. I went and like I probably destroyed about like 20 models or whatever like that in his army. He comes and destroys 20 of mine. The difference is, if we both destroy 20 models, he only has like 10 left, plus an Earthbreaker,
Yeah.
mind you, whereas I still have about like 20 guys left. So by the end of the game, then the fortunate thing is because I feeded so late, then I popped feed late and camped, and Alexia's like up there and stuff like that, and all the Risen they go, I create some to engage Ayana and Holt and all that stuff. So and at this point, he's running very low on things that can actually attack. And one thing he didn't realize is if you kill Alexia, the Risen don't all have to die. So I chose to keep him alive. And it's like, oh, Cyan and Holt are still like all tied up, and the Earthbreaker is still tied up, and there's still some Boomhowlers who are now engaging Durgan and all this stuff. Although Boomhowlers apparently are terrible and can't hit Durgan. So like I had like two rounds in a row where they just couldn't hit Durgan. But whatever, like now everything's tied up, Earthbreaker's tied up, whatever, and Haley's like camping eight and Arcane Shield on her. Hold on now, because I'm deathly afraid of the assassination. But what ends up happening is he ends up running out of time.
No.
Yeah, and if you look at the clocks at the end, I had about 35 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he just basically couldn't chew through all of my stuff. And again, with me engaging as Earthbreaker, with Boomhowlers, he couldn't even trample out.
It's kind of funny because the thing is, you'd think some a guy with, with less pieces to play with would be easier on the clock versus a guy with more pieces in his army.
I honestly just attribute, well, me running not running out of time, I attribute to like list familiarity, and for him running out of time, I just attribute to I got so much stuff,
Oh, that works too.
right? Like, I mean, because he's still got to kill it all, and like he has to, like, for him, in the event that when like he's down to those last few pieces, order of activation is very important, right? Especially when like literally half your army is tied up into an Earthbreaker.
Right.
So it's kind of like, well, if you know that Earthbreaker's activation is very important and he might have to activate last or whatever, it's kind of like, well, what order am I going to do the other things to clear him up? And I think once I basically started camping eight and holding Arcane Shield, I don't think it was possible for me to die at that point.
But I thought, potentially you could use the Earthbreaker to clear up those like massive chunks of infantry you still have.
You could, but I was spacing them out pretty well.
Okay.
So yeah, it worked out. So I got the win there. And I would end up being 4-0 on day one. And
Congrats.
thank you. And I was the number one Signar player.
Of
Yeah,
that day.
of that day.
But yeah, my final record, if anyone's keeping score. It was a sad 1-3.
That's okay.
Womp
You know what? We're all winners for playing the game.
Sure.
Yeah.
But some more than others.
Should I just go finish off my day two then?
Well, I have a day two as well.
Okay.
What I did, I played War Machine that day as well.
It's
And
fine, though.
okay.
But it's a different tournament, right?
Yep. It was
Okay, you can
even,
talk about your tournament.
well, I think it deserves a mention because this tournament was run by Jerry Hodson.
Yep, which I also met. Super nice guy.
Yep.
Thank you very much for talking to me, Jerry.
And he's also the captain of the WTC
Yep, Team
for.
Two.
Oh, there's two teams for Canada?
Yeah, Marc Andre is captain of Team One, I
Oh, okay.
believe, and then Jerry's captain of Team Two.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yeah, I managed to play in Jerry's Yeah, I think Jerry unfortunately didn't get 4-0 on that day. I think he managed to get like 2-2 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I'm pretty sure. Basically, he managed to get on third day. So, but you know, he just basically said, you know what, for the rest of day two, I'm just going to run Jerry's legit tournament, as he literally called it. And he says, oh, don't worry, guys. I'm going to have like awesome prizing. Like, you know, prizing that you could find at a convenience store. So yeah, basically he ran Jerry's legit tournament, which was basically just another like 50-point tournament using Steamroller and using Death Clock. And it was just like, oh, you know, just a regular tournament, except it was just, you know, slightly more casual. You know, people weren't so concerned about wins because, you know, the best thing you could win in that tournament was literally packets of nerds.
Hmm.
Okay, so my round one on that tournament was, the round one of that tournament was close quarters, and it was against Shane, who played Circle. And he ran Kaya 2. I decided to go with my Eris 1 list, which I had no chance of playing the day before. The match was just basically me just running up for both scenarios. And he tried to basically keep his beasts back all game. He feed early, just ran his beasts up. I think basically maybe scrapped a beast on 9 and just basically teleported back. And I think for the rest of the game, he kept them... He was conservative and kept them back. I think he was he thought that I would probably Bowlust on my infantry and try to finish off his beasts. Except for some reason, I think I was more interested in going after his stones, which I feeded on my Kazi assassins. I just basically just charged stones, tried to take them out. They managed to, on their mini feat, they managed to take out one set of stones, but the other set of stones was still around. But the thing was, his beasts were still far enough away that they had no way of just teleporting up to Irisk and assassinating him. Yeah, I think that game would just managed to just jam up the zone and just go for the points win.
Circle. Especially Kaya 2 versus Kaya-Z with Iron Flesh.
Yeah.
Can't handle it. That sucks for him.
Yeah, unfortunately those Kaya-Z were around all game. And the Winter Guard, I think they were just basically just avoided for us the game. So basically, near the end of the game, they managed to just run around and just go in that gap between the two flags, just jump up the zone. And I managed to get the points for the win.
Good for you. Me and Sotoku here. Next match.
Oh, okay. I guess so. We'll have to talk about the rest of the matches first before we go to the awesome.
Isn't there only one more?
Yeah, I guess. And I'm not going to compare to your matches, but okay. Round two was against a Signar player, Anthony, who dropped Kane 1 against my Irisk 1, and I guess that when I saw both his lists, the other list was like Nemo, one of the Nemos with a Stormwall. And from then, I'm like, oh, crap. If I go against Kane 1, I'm screwed because he can just shoot all my infantry. And if I go against Nemo, which I'm not too familiar about Nemo because Alan never plays him. But the fact that he has a Stormwall, I'm like, oh, crap. I can't charge anything with that with Bowlust because it just basically just shred them up with POW 12, like Covering Fire, right?
Yeah.
But in the end, he dropped Kane 1. And I'm like, I'm screwed. So we decided to play it out. The scenario was supply and demand, and he used storm blades. Yep, storm blades, and he just had Rooper on them. So I guess he ran them up to jam up the zone, and my Iron Fang ran up to jam the zone, and I had my Winter Guard opposite of his gun mages, which I thought was already a bad matchup, but. And I thought he would Deadeye on the Gun Mages, which would basically make it academic to just take out the Winter Guard, even with defense 14. But he didn't. So basically he needs 7s to hit, and there were actually a few shots that missed.
Mm-hmm.
So my Winter Guard just ran up. But the thing is that even without Deadeye, he managed to shred the Winter Guard that basically it was just down to two guys. And but the thing is that what was really the problem with him all game, problem for him all game, was Iron Fleshed Iron Fang Pikeman, because at armor 18 and defense 16, that's really hard to handle with POW 10s, I believe. And on top of that, his knights who were engaged with my Iron Fang basically had no way of dealing with Iron Fleshed Pikeman. Sorry. And on top of that, he also had the Black 13th and also the Tempest Blazers, minimum unit, and he ran them up to my Kaizi assassins and shot a few of them down. And for some reason, I thought he would light cav them back, but he decided to light cav them forward because he was probably thinking about going for the assassination on Irisk. Because if he manages to hit with a brutal shot, That could probably kill Irisk. Mm. But then I'm just like, okay, I'll just I just ran up my Kazi and just destroyed his Blazers, right? And then I walked out, walked up with Widowmakers, and I think put a few shots on the Black 13, and pretty much managed to kill them as well. Mm. Even though that was like, I managed to handle his infantry, the game went back and forth so that none of us got points, and I managed to win on time with about 15 minutes remaining. Because I thought he basically had that game on attrition, like before the game even started. I feeded with Irisk after he ran up everything to got everything basically within like sort of engagement range, and I knew that I had to walk my my Widowmakers, which wouldn't give the aiming bonus, but with the feed it practically gave them the aiming bonus. Mm. So he would they would only need to hit the Black 13th on sixes. And then, so basically, my feet was up, and he decided to, on his turn, he decided to feet with Kane.
Oh.
So basically, I won't be losing out as many pieces as I would be on a Kane feet turn. But the thing is, it also didn't help that he missed a lot of shots. But he managed to take out Kovnik Joe.
Oh.
Yeah. So I guess it was probably maybe worth the feet turn because the rest of the turn, my my Winter Guard couldn't tough or boost against his gun mages. But yeah, I guess in the end, I managed to win by time.
Good for you.
Thanks.
So you're 2-0 at Jerry's Legit Tournament.
Yeah, and I managed to get third place for some reason.
Strength of schedule.
Yep, strength of schedule.
And you got a sweet box of nerds as your prize?
Yep, two boxes of nerds.
Oh,
so
good job for you.
Thanks.
Oh man, no, you know, we have to take our trophies and remember them.
Yep.
Yep. So, all right, my day two. I don't know if you're aware, but so far I've only used Haley and Kane, and I still have yet to use Striker 3. And I've apparently found out that there was 11 Scorn players, and like 6 Troll players, and like 4 Convergence players. And I'm like, how have I not seen any of these people? And only one person now in like the undefeated bracket is Scorn, and it was our friend Charles.
Right.
So like, oh man, I really hope I see Charles. I really need to drop Striker 3, right? But of course I don't. Instead I get Frank, who's playing Krix. I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm like, I haven't played against Gatsby 2 yet, so chances are I'll play against Gatsby 2, because, you know, that just seems like the thing to do.
Right.
Scenarios outflank, the two big circles.
Okay.
That's it. So I forget who goes first. It doesn't matter. My plan is always the same. Run up, jam, stuff like that. You know, I probably went first.
Okay.
So I ran. Oh, yes, I did. So I ran up, you know, put my stuff into, like, as close to the zones as I could, and, you know, tough, just make sure myself is resilient. He goes on his turn, and right from the get-go, he takes his Blood Witches, makes him corporeal, and kind of runs him up into the zone, like just like two in the zone to kind of like force me to get them out of there, but like doesn't want to commit the rest.
Right.
And then Banes run up, like, you know, not too far, just enough to like countercharge me if I decide to get a little too coy. So I kind of analyze this game. Oh, and Gatsby's behind a wall, and he puts some clouds up, like way up, kind of like into the zone in front of my boom howlers and my gun mages. So I think he was trying to get me to not advance basically into the too far into the zone. So his Banes could be the ones like dominating into my zone. So I'm like, oh, that sucks. So I looked at the game, I'm like, this is gonna be a long, gross, grindy game. But then I'm like, I looked, I'm like, he didn't put the clouds directly in front of Gatsby. So I'm like, I think I can kill him. So I just kind of did some quick math in my head, and I'm like, yeah, I think I can easily do this. So it relies on a few things happening, but I decided to go for it. So I pull one off Squire, I give one to Thorn. Thorn runs right up towards like into some Banes, and like I'm right close to Gatsby, only about like 5-ish inches away from Gatsby.
Right.
All right. He's still going to get the wall bonus or whatever, but that's how far I went. Or I move the Squire first to make sure Haley will definitely still be in... I want that reroll if right. I need it. So I move Squire first. Then I move Haley up. You know, I basically cast Time Bomb at Gatsby. And at about 5 inches, I think it auto-hits him no matter where it deviates. But I could be mistaken. Maybe if I roll 6, it disappears. I don't know. But either way, I figured that it was probably going to hit him. I got the direct hit anyway. I boosted damage. Gatsby's sitting on 3. So he's currently behind the wall. He's at 19. He's like 19, 19 or whatever. But like either way, the Time Bomb is what is going to start all this from happening. Like,
right.
To happen. But I hit on the 3 dice. So I'm like, oh, okay. So then it ends up like being like dice minus 4 or something like that. I boost damage. Get like 5 damage on him or whatever. So now he's minus 2 defense. So then Thorn reaction drives a little forward. So now there's no more wall bonus either. And I TK Gatsby just a half an inch and backwards away, so he's no longer touching the wall. Like he's no longer like affected by the wall.
Right.
Basically. So effectively there's like an 8 defense swing in the course of like.
So basically becomes like defense 11, maybe?
Well if his base is 15, he's time bombed, so he's 13.
Right.
He's backwards, so he's 11.
Okay.
But he used to have a wall, but now he doesn't have a wall either. So it went down huge. It basically it's 8 defense difference.
Right.
From the beginning. So then I couldn't give Dead Eye to Eris. So Eris walked up and decided to try to shoot Gatsby in the back. Gets it, takes that 3 focus off, and does like 1 or 2 damage. It's like exact average rolls basically. So now Gatsby takes basically like 7 damage. Right? So he has about half his life left. So I'm like, okay. So Boom Howlers, they walk up. I'm only able to get 2 in range. And they're only rat 4, but effective they're actually rat 8,
right.
Essentially. So one misses, one hits, and it's like dice minus five with the boom howler shots. So I get exactly like 2 damage as well with that. Then Alexia comes in. Now at this point, I think Gatsby only has like 5 or 6 life left, maybe 7. Alexia comes in with a boostable hand cannon and finishes job. For those of you at home wondering, it's like, well, what if I miss with Alexia? Because actually that happened to me at my round 4 LCQ. But basically, if I had missed with Alexia, I'd have 10 Nis Hunters that can all walk up and shoot at Gatsby.
Right.
I'd have to decide how to combine them, but basically there's 10 full Nis that will definitely get in range. And then I still had about 3-ish gun mages that would definitely get into range. And the other ones, I'm not sure if I would. But basically there's potentially 7 gun mage shots. So I think it was very reasonable to assume that this was going to happen.
Right.
But it basically, the reason why this was kind of risky is because it depended on time bomb hitting. I assumed that it would hit, even if it quote unquote misses. But you know, so I finished the game on top of 2.
Oh wow!
Yep. To get the early victory, and I decided to watch other people's games. You know, hopefully cheer on Charles so he could win, and then. You know, hopefully I get paired up against him.
Well, you said there were 11 Scorn players, right there?
So yeah, but only one by day 2.
Oh, okay. Charles. I see.
So then finally, my round 6, I'm the pair down. So that basically this means this. If I win, there's another round of the tournament. If I lose, everyone gets to go home. So most people wanted me to lose this game.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't say that.
Very... One person joking around said it, but and no one else. Everyone's like, no, we don't want that. But
okay, I wanted you to win.
Yeah, I wanted to win too. Hey, spoiler alert. Of course, you know, now I'm actually locked into Striker 3 because this is the potential final round. And it's another Crix player. And I'm like, I'm looking at all of this. You're like Terminus, Gatsby 2, and like some other one. But they all have bile thralls. I'm like, oh my god, this is going to be unbearable because like my Striker 3, this doesn't really have much in the way of being able to just massively remove infantry for at range,
right?
Like my other lists can.
Like, doesn't have the minimum gun mages.
It does have gun mages.
Right.
It has black 13s, but I should. It's a scenario with the 2 objectives and 2 flags. I'm gonna be honest. I told him this as well, and I apologize for it. Like, I wasn't really taking the game too seriously because I'm like, wow, this is just really bad. And he ended up taking Terminus. I was secretly hoping he was going to take Gatsby 2 because Gatsby 2 is like amazing, right?
Right.
But Gatsby 2 can randomly die to, you know, like anything in my army once it's like pal 14. Like
right.
If I get like a lucky charge in or something like that. And even if he has Hellbound up so I can't charge, I could still get in there with my Pathfinders basically.
Right.
Thanks to Runewood. But nope, he decided to choose the unkillable Terminus and pretty much like it's basically 4 rounds in a row I'm taking Bile Thralls to the face. Terminus is like always on armor like 35 and like pretty much the whole game. And
you can camp that much?
Because he keeps getting souls that turn into focus.
I thought that was only on his feet turn.
No. On his feet turn, everyone in his control area that dies gives him a soul token, which
right.
gives him armor.
Right.
And then the following turn that focus all turn or all those souls turn to focus,
right.
which is armor. But then what he would do is like he'd go up and like get engaged with like, you know, like 8 guys
and kill them all, right?
And then have a Bile Thrall purge to
oh,
kill all of them, so he gets like 8 souls instantly, just like that.
Oh, I see. So, okay, so
right. Yep.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep, so it's gross, you know, he's always in high armor, and like I had no chance of actually killing him, But what ended up happening was I was doing a good job of keeping scenario like alive, and by the end I realized, oh no, because I was so busy trying to like not lose my scenario and not have strike or die, because of course it's a kill box scenario,
Right.
I didn't do a good job of holding the other side basically on the table, the left side basically. So Terminus then started getting points, and I'm like, oh, and then I made the biggest error. I took my gun mages up and I was gonna thunderbolt him off the scenario to keep me alive another turn or so, and he sack pawned.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay, I guess none of my gun mages are contesting this zone now. So basically, honestly, the better solution would be for me to just walk up to contest at least the flag and then shoot the Balthals in the back. That's what I should have done. Because by then, like, there's a lot of stuff that we that died here.
Right.
But I didn't. So that was basically the game losing error. In the end, actually, I still had about 30 minutes and he was down to 4 minutes.
Oh wow, so you could
So
have.
actually, yeah, if I had done a better job of contesting that flag on the left side, yeah, who knows, things could be different. But I'll know better for next time. And honestly, it's my own fault. Like, I should now just know, treat every game like as if I can win it. Like this
Right.
one, I kind of went in thinking I have no chance, and it ended up I had a very real chance. But then it made me realize, like, you know what, I should have maybe like I should have revalued the strike list. And while I like kind of auto dropped Kayn against Legion, and what I auto dropped like Kaylee against like the scary Durgan, Earthbreaker. Really and truly, maybe Strike would have been fine against those lists. Because ultimately, I mean, like, Vayle lost because she couldn't eat through all of my stuff. Striker has even more stuff than my Kayn list, and all of it hits harder than my Kayn list. But there's no, like, Kayn assassination potential. But
Your
whatever.
infantry do more work, right? Or
My Striker's infantry would do
yeah.
more work. Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, I gotta practice that a bit more. Like I said, I only got about 4 games in with Striker previously. So I didn't really know what I was capable of, and I'm still trying to tweak it now, but problem is I don't really get to play in many 3-list events, so I feel like it's I don't know how like good the practice is worth, but I still want to try it out. So yeah, in the end I lost and Marc-Andre ended up winning, so I guess I'm not even really the top Signar player anymore. But
You were on day one,
I was
though.
on day one, it doesn't matter. And honestly, the people who were there know, but like it ends up I didn't even know that they were gonna give prizes for second and third. All weekend I saw that they had a
The
that
trophy.
awesome ironclad like trophy
Yep,
for
the hammer.
for the Masters winner. But then it ended up so and we go up, they're gonna call it the top three and stuff like that, and they're like, third place, like the AY. And then like I saw that they were holding something in their hand, and I'm like, and honestly I got really emotional. And yeah, actually like I teared up and stuff, and they were like, are you crying? And I'm like, I've just like, yeah, because I've been playing for so long. Like, I haven't played in many competitive events, I guess, but
Right.
like, I've been playing so long, and I guess I never really like won anything. And I don't know, like, this was like the first big event in Canada. I don't know, like, there's like just a bunch of things that were going through my mind. So, yeah, I took my trophy and got a hug. And yeah.
Good job.
Thank
Congratulations.
you. Yeah, so it feels really good. But then, yeah. Really though, as good as all this War Machine was, and as intense as all my games were, I can honestly say I was starting to feel a little burned out of playing War Machine, ironically, even though I wasn't playing competitively.
I mean,
But
it's only
then,
six
yeah, but
games.
no, but no, I mean burned out previous to this tournament.
Oh, okay.
But then after playing in this event, I'm like, whoa, my like vigor to play War Machine has just like been like reignited, basically.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, yeah, I'm super into it. And I think you and I think it's pretty much agreed we want to send a shout out to the tournament organizers.
Yeah, definitely. They
Like,
did a great
yep,
job.
thank you very much to Matt, Tim, Agatha, and Aiden, and anyone else who helped. I know there's other people who like definitely helped. And
And
hey,
the Legion
Tim,
Hall.
yeah, the Legion Hall, and we helped clean up.
Yep.
Yeah, I tried lifting those tables and it hurt my hands, and pretty sweet.
Yeah, they
But
were heavy stuff.
you know what, I've said this before, like I told them all this personally, but I just want to like maybe say it as more generally to people and stuff like that. But for a while here in the GTA and stuff like that, people like say, oh wow, how come Toronto, like it's one of the biggest cities in North America, but we don't have like a major event. I guess this wasn't technically Toronto, but it's GTA.
Yep, the GTA area.
But like a lot of people say this, but oftentimes, like many things in life, it's easy to say something, but it's another thing to actually do it. And the fact that basically there were these like group of people who said, yeah, it's true, why isn't there anything around here, let's do something about it, and they did. Like, I think that's actually amazing.
Yep.
And it was an incredible turnout. I mean, the Masters event was 88 people. right? And then they still had like room for a Young Bloods tournament, like a separate side event. And I think they had talked that they're going to make this like an actual convention next year.
Yep.
So
at a hotel.
Yep. Oh, so yeah, amazing. You know what? I can promise you, unless like something happens, like I die, I'll probably come to. I will definitely come to this event year after year, and I look to try to help in whatever way I can, non financially, because I don't have money anyway.
But you can help by playing.
Yeah, I can help by playing. But, you know, like I'll help clean up and stuff like that, like last, like this year. And
yeah,
stuff.
We'll stay to the end.
Yeah, stay to the end. And you know what? Afterwards, the dinner, like talking with like all the people was fun. And, you know, people said like, it's like, oh, so, you know, AY, when you win, like, you know, what's going to happen? Like if I ever won like an event,
right.
Like number one, I'd be like, oh, I see. It's a crying joke. So, yep, I'm going to be forever known as that. But I don't mind, honestly. I felt like so overwhelmed with like happiness. And I was pretty proud of myself at the end because I think, you know, I went in saying like, yeah, you know, there's a very real chance I could just lose in round one and stuff
right.
like that. And then it didn't happen.
Well, let's go on the record that I want to say that during day one in the morning, you were like, oh man, I'm just so unprepared. I just don't know what to do, man. And I just, yeah, I'm just so unprepared. And then you go up to like, you know, day two and everything like that. And I said, you know, you'll probably get to day two. You'll probably, you know, get pretty, like you'll probably win it or at least get really close. You're like, no, no, no. And then you did.
Yeah, that's true. So congrats again to Marc-Andre, who
yep.
won.
What did you learn out of this experience?
Honestly, I just, like I said, it's a matter of renewed interest in War Machine. And now I really want to play against a larger variety of people. It seems that pretty much every con I've ever been to, I've met a lot of really nice people. And I always have a good time, like, you know, having conversations and stuff like that. And this event, which I pretty much consider a con, was no exception. Like, you know, we went to Big Master, we just met new people and got new perspectives
yep.
on how to play the game. But one thing that I really learned, I think the event has kind of humbled me. Strange, it's weird that like I...
Humbled,
yeah.
Eh?
Well, because I do better and somehow it's like humbled. Well, because like before I think I've made too much... When I talk to people, I'm kind of like, this is my opinion. What do you think about it? And it's like, okay, let me tell you why I don't agree with your opinion. And let me tell you more about my opinion. But now after this event and getting just all this perspective and stuff, like, I don't know why. It's like winning more games has allowed me to realize there are other ways you can play this game because I don't know why. It seems like it's like contradictory. But now I've basically made it a personal policy to be like, all right, if I disagree with someone, I really want you to explain to me like what it is that you're like, your reasoning is for these things. Because I personally now like, I really want to understand it. And if it ends up like that, it is actually just like a quote unquote wrong opinion. Maybe by you like talking about it, you'll be like, oh, actually.
Bombs are the best.
Yeah, like maybe by you saying it out loud, you'll be like, oh, wait a minute. That doesn't sound right out loud. So who knows? Or maybe you'll convince me. Who knows? But either way, I want to be more. This event now has just made me more open to like new ideas.
What? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird.
Bombardier's not the best, by the
They're
way.
They're not. But,
Really? Like, I mean, in your matchups, did you face off against, like, an Orthodox list or something that made you think about that?
No, it's because, like, you know, when people say, like, oh, you know, Signor has an advantage against Crix, and I'm like, okay, all it takes is one feat turn, blah, 50% of my stuff is dead. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of, like, something, like, a belief that I had that just kind of, like, disappears.
Right.
And then, like, Earthbreaker, it's like, but yeah, but like, look, so apparently this situation said, oh, Earthbreaker's bad. And everyone will tell you, it's like, well, look at the things that can, like, you know, like really cause you a problem, you eliminate it, whatever. Like, people tell you the steps. But it's one thing to, like, yeah, logically, that may all make sense. But once you are in game, it's trying to manufacture the situation. So in that game against Durgan, where I identified, Eris is going to be the biggest contributor to my Haley just randomly dying. I eliminate her. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like, oh, this thing that everyone is afraid of is also much less scary, and now I just have to annoy it to death.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of like, well, you know, like a lot of times we think of the game as like a, can you kill heavies or can't you? Can you kill heavies or can you kill colossals or can't you? But oftentimes my solution is, no, don't kill it at all. Just, you know, annoy it. You know, and that's the thing. It's kind of like, so by seeing how other people like play and stuff like that, I don't know, like seeing how other people quote unquote annoyed me and my list, like I guess it just kind of opened my eyes. Also, like, it's ironic that I've been playing so long, but I've played so little against Crix, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so I learned, basically I learned to be more open and accepting of like ideas and actually wanting to listen. I'll still give you my input, but it's not that I immediately dismissed before, but like I was more likely to, I guess, like kind of dismiss your idea. But now it's kind of like, no, whatever, play it the way you want. If you got a plan for it, let's just see it, you know.
Okay.
And after, you know, we'll see how a game goes.
What I learned from the whole Open is that the Open was also a great opportunity for us because even though we've been to War Machine Weekend and TempleCon, we've, funny enough, we only managed to basically meet, like, American players.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And this actually probably is, like, the first time we actually got to meet other Canadian players, because I know that some managed, for example, Jerry and a few of his buddies managed to travel all the way from Alberta all the way to play in the Open, and there was also a few players that traveled all the way from Quebec to play in the Open. So,
like Gord? Well, I'm not from Quebec. Gord came from Alberta.
Oh, okay.
He had WTC. He was the guy who won second.
Yep. Awesome. What I learned was that the death clock is real, and it will kill you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a hot topic for a lot of things. I mean, it's like some of those things that people say you can game, or it's one of those things that you...
I think it makes the game so exciting.
But all in all, it's basically like either like whatever your opinion on it, it's something basically you have to keep your eye on.
Yep.
And there were basically some games. There was actually that one game where I faced against Butcher 3 and the Mostar, which I basically had in the bag that lost the death clock. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people had that like that situation before. So death clock is real. And it basically, yeah, like whenever you can, play on the clock.
Apparently, I've learned that I'm very good on the clock.
Except for that one game where you had like a few seconds left.
Yeah, but he was also down to like a few minutes.
Like, okay.
Like, it was my 34 seconds. It's like 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
And I actually had 4 minutes. I just spent that 3 minutes and 30 seconds killing the Negro.
Well, 4 minutes is still 4 minutes spent. But, yes. And I guess it also gave me, a perspective on competitive play. I mean, like, all in all, like, my brain, was telling me, say, you know, logically, I should probably play the Youngbloods because I don't have that much experience. But like I said, my gut feeling was that basically, like, you know, I should probably play in Masters.
You got very good experience from doing this, though, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can joke about things like, it's like, oh, well, you know, don't get in the kill box, sort of like that. But it's kind of like, well, you did it, and there's a real consequence to it. It's like, yeah, it actually costs you the game by itself pretty much, right, at early on. So I think you'll be more mindful of it in the future.
Yeah. So hopefully I never clock myself out, and hopefully I never killbox myself out next time.
And I noticed even today, we played a game, and you were playing on the death clock.
Yeah.
And it was just like, even though it's just like a regular casual game, you know, it's a good habit to get into. It does add a whole extra element to the game.
Yeah, that's true.
It does make it quite intense when it starts to tick down.
I mean, like, at like the first few turns, you're just like, oh, you know, whatever. But yeah, at like one of the last few turns, like, click on, it actually does matter, and it becomes like sort of like basically almost a win condition in itself.
Yeah, that's apparently what I did.
Yep.
So yeah. Okay. Well, next time we'll actually have like one of our more usual like topics.
Right.
You know, sorry for those who don't like battle reports, but you know, the Southern Ontario Open was amazing enough to dedicate an entire episode to battle reports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you managed to get third.
Yep. So I'm sure people were interested. I guess maybe people are interested in, what the hell does AY do? how does he play exactly? And I guess now I've explained a little bit of how I play in like a actual major event.
First of many.
First of many, I hope. Except I can't really get out that much.
Well, don't worry. Maybe this one will start other ones in Canada.
Who knows?
Or sorry, in Ontario. I mean Ontario, I mean Southern Ontario.
You know, for all you Canadians that I met today that, you know, and for Americans and stuff like that, see you at War Machine Weekend, because I probably won't see you earlier than that.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Yes.
So, yeah. All right. Then I guess we could sign out.
Yeah.
Please remember to like us on Facebook, the Troll Patrol Podcast, and follow us on Twitter, Troll Patrol PC. And please send your questions and comments and, you know, random things to trollpatrolpodcast@gmail.com. This has been the AY signing off.
This is Justin, a.k.a. Dust.
It's not a.k.a.
This is Dust.
Okay, that's good, actually. That was actually pretty good. I'm gonna splice that one for like many years.
No, no.
Okay, as long as you say it every time, I would have to splice it.
No, this is extortion, or whatever you call it. You can't extort me to say
what
it.
Why do I extort you?
Huh?
There's no money involved.
No, but it's like you have to say it, or I'm gonna make you say it. And
well, you know what? If you were just more cooperative,
this is me holding being held hostage.
This is why you were cut for two episodes. Is your punishment for not referring to yourself as the dust?
Wow.
Yep.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's true. The rest of us abide by our nicknames.
What? Like, Brennan get a nickname?
It's because not good enough for a nickname yet.
Oh wow! And Alan didn't really get a nickname that stuck. I mean, we call him the A-Dubs or Sumo Burger, but it doesn't really, like...
Papa Burger.
Or Papa Burger.
He actually liked Papa Burger. Remember, he was like, it's not bad, actually. And you were so like, what? Because at first you're like, see, this is how he gets his nicknames. I said, I actually kind of like it. What?
Well, I never said that about Dust.
Huh?
I never said that about Dust.
I know, because you don't realize that it's good. That's why you didn't realize Alan's nickname was good. And then it's like, but then Alan likes it. And see, everyone likes calling you Dust. You're the only one who doesn't like to be called Dust.
All right, we're setting off.
Okay. See you later, guys.
Bye.